Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your official home for Jaguars football. AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio WOKV. Voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Loggeman. And Jaguars.com senior editor, Vic Ketchman. Break down the last Jaguars game and take a look at the next time we take the field. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Aetna. We want you to know the Jacksonville Transportation Group, the official transportation provider of the Jaguars, and by Prudential Network Realty, extremely full service. Now, to get things started, here's Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome inside WOKV Jaguars Central for another edition of Jaguars This Week, presented by our friends at Aetna. I'm Brian Sexton. Vic Ketchman, the senior editor of Jaguars.com, is here. Jeff Loggeman's across the table. Joe Fortunato has his sunny disposition on today. He'll be taking your calls at 355-NFL1. Free agency is almost a week old. Really, the only preposterous deal I've seen is for Big Al going to Washington. And we knew about that in advance.
Yeah. Big money.
All right. Now, you were one of the guys that
there have been some other ones.
Preposterous, though? Maybe the Cardinals deal. What was it, $20 million, $22 million for Kurt Warner?
Yeah, but there have been some others. I have to think of them again. Well,
the big one, though, obviously, was Al Haynesworth.
What do you got, like $41 million in guaranteed
money?
If
you look at it, it's actually a three-year deal worth $48 million.
Well, Castle will get a ton of money. That was not a free agent signing, although it was
a trade
in the free agency period.
And that will come down as being ridiculous.
Let's see.
Based on one season. I just want to get to the Al Haynesworth thing, because the last 2 years you have, and rightfully so, pointed out how good Albert Haynesworth has been.
Best defensive player in football.
All right. $16 million a year, essentially?
Yeah, but that's Dan Snyder.
Yeah. I guess when you have no limits.
And I'd be curious to know, because, the reports are is that there were anywhere between 5 and 6 teams that were interested in Albert Haynesworth at stroke of midnight. And if that's the case, then maybe Dan Snyder didn't negotiate against himself for the first time. But, that's a tremendous amount of money to pay a player. As I said last week, when you're dealing with that kind of money, he'd better be clean.
There's a very good article about it. Peter King wrote it in his Monday Morning Quarterback on Sports Illustrated. He was with your buddy, Brad Blank, in Boston. Brad's client, Chris Canty, who ended up signing with the Giants. And it was interesting how the parallels between the Redskins talking to his guy and Haynesworth. He writes how it goes down. It's worth your time.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. I just remembered another crazy one.
Okay.
T.J. Hushmanzada by the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Nuts.
32-year-old receiver.
Crazy Seahawks are insane. Remember that, Jeff? Crazy Eddie?
Plays
in New York?
Yeah.
Oh.
The commercial Crazy Eddies?
Gotcha.
The Seahawks are insane.
How about, and this is one that just came down today, how about the deal that is reportedly on the table to be finalized for Ray Lewis? 3 years, $25 million for Ray Lewis.
Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised there, not because they are going to re-sign him, but Ray was an unrestricted free agent, and it's not like teams were banging down his door with big money offers to sign Ray Lewis.
That's a lot of money for a museum piece.
And my question is that
he does not move well anymore.
Did anybody else offer Ray a deal that approached $25 million over 3 years? I don't think so. So if that's the case, then how's the deal structured, and does it make sense for the Ravens to do that? Is that another example of a team negotiating against itself?
He can't play to that level. He is incapable of playing to that level, so they are clearly going to overpay. And then you get into, you worry about what happened here last year, breeding contempt in the locker room. Hey, this guy's making that, and he's not the player I am.
Yeah, but there won't be contempt in the locker room for Ray. That's a different animal there. Ray Lewis garners a lot of respect around the league and in particular in the Baltimore locker room. And I could understand that, it would be almost not getting Ray, maybe, if he ended up with a three-year, $10 million deal. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He is the unquestioned leader of that locker room. And if you don't pay him well, can he still be that?
What if he can't play like he even did
well,
this
he
year?
Can't. What if, I mean, he can't. So, I mean, nobody can.
But how long can he hold on to that title of being the unquestioned leader?
He wasn't very good at the end of the year.
Well, that's what
Truth
I'm saying.
Truth be known.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, and you're the only one of us that can tell it. So how long will the players follow him if his skills fall off markedly this year?
Well, I mean, they'll follow him, but, I mean, you still have to be productive. I mean, there's no such thing as having a leader that doesn't produce. I mean, it just doesn't happen because then it just falls upon deaf ears, yeah. You know. And so he's got to produce to be able to retain that leadership role. And you know, Ray's still got something left. You know, from watching Ray last year, early in the year, he looked great.
He really did.
And then at the end of the year, he fell off. And so, I mean, that kind of, I guess, either is the sign of injuries during the season or a sign of age. And obviously the Ravens are the ones have to determine what that was.
There are a handful of deals that have gotten done, big deals. But it sure seems like most teams are taking the Jaguars approach with this one. Did I read that the Steelers gave their entire football staff weekend off?
They went on vacation for the start of free agency. They took their entire organization to Seven Springs, which is a ski resort. And just outside of Pittsburgh,
the same thing too.
And what they, you know, what they spent for the weekend vacation, they probably would have spent on limousines picking up players at the airport. You know, I mean, it's just
so is free agency.
They're going to get. They went into last weekend with 13 unrestricted free agents. The Super Bowl champion, 13 unrestricted free agents. Nate Washington just signed a pretty pricey deal with the Titans. Brian McFadden will undoubtedly sign a pricey
Lions,
deal.
Lions, right?
Is it going to be the Lions?
That's where I saw him.
Okay, he was in Arizona. Okay. I know that. He'll sign a pricey deal. They're going to come away with a major, major compensatory picks haul a year from now, a chance to rebuild their team, you know, get young again. And this is a team that has done something with compensatory picks. Hines Ward was a compensatory draft pick. Mike Vrabel was a compensatory draft pick by the Steelers. Amos Zaraway was a compensatory draft pick. They had somebody recently who turned out to be a good player for me who was a compensatory pick. That's kind of their formula. Lose guys to get picks. Nate Washington was an undrafted player. So they lose an undrafted player, and they're going to get probably a pretty good compensatory pick award for a guy who didn't cost them a draft pick.
How
to,
high can
to
you
acquire
get?
In the first place.
How high of a pick can you get for an undrafted
third round?
Can you get that high for an undrafted guy?
Hines Ward was a third-round compensatory draft pick.
But, I mean, for an undrafted guy that leaves, the league could give them a third-round pick?
Well, not just for one guy. It's a net situation.
Okay.
So if you lost five
right.
and signed none, oh, you're going to get a lot. In their case, they're going to lose. They brought one back, Kiamato.
Chris Kiamato, yeah.
So though they could lose 12. Well, Berger's not going to resign. They could lose 10. I mean, if they lost 10 and Kiamato wouldn't count against him because you're re-signing your own guy.
Right.
If you lost 10 and signed none, oy, I mean, you know, you'd have multiple compensatory picks from round three on.
How does that formula work, Vic?
It works with, first of all, number. If you sign five and lose two, then you're already minus three.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get into awards. Playing time and awards. So it's net sign plus or minus. It's number of signed, number of lost.
Right.
Play time and awards. So if you have, here's where the Jaguars have a chance on Khalif Barnes because he's a left tackle. If Khalif Barnes plays all 16 games as he did for the Jaguars, and let's say he was to get some kind of an award, comeback player of the year or whatever.
Sure.
Although he's going to Oakland, I can't imagine a worse
place
for him.
Did he sign there? I saw he was there today.
But I can't imagine. He'll probably end up joining the Hells Angels. But but you know, if Khalif was to, and he has home run potential, that would be good for the Jaguars. The Jaguars planned.
Is it based? My question is this: for example, you brought up, okay, if a team loses five and gains nothing, you have a net loss of five.
Right, that's going to get
you
picks.
So that's obviously taken into account.
Right.
Now, does the type of individuals equate into that? For example, if you lose Khalif Barnes, who started 16 games, okay, and then if you lost, for example, let me just throw out a name, let's say a Pro Bowl left tackle who started the same number of games, is there a difference between those two players because one is a higher level player than another?
Play time and awards. That's all.
Okay.
So
how about contract received in free agency? Does that take into account?
Yeah, they look at. I mean, it does the actual nomenclature, the actual terminology is number, playtime, and awards or honors like Pro Bowl. All right, but if you sign a guy for $20 million and the only guy you lost signed for $1 million, now that's where the subjectiveness comes in. You know, there you get into subjective evaluation.
You need to do a little research.
Well, I want to say one thing.
Okay.
Before we go to a break. Reggie Williams really screwed the Jaguars. And I'm not talking about the way he played for him for all these years.
Well, we'll explain why.
I'm talking about getting arrested. He's probably taken himself off the market, and they were counting on him being signed by somebody and helping their compensatory picks awards.
Yeah, well, shocking that he would do that to them. He's done it for the last 5 years. We'll take a break and come back. Jeff and Vic are with you. I'm going to CBS 47 to do TV. Jaguars This Week continues right after this.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
All right, this is the sexinless segment. Me, Jeff Lagerman, with Vic Ketchman, .com, we'll just call it as we always do. Now, with free agency, obviously, you talked about before going to break there, Reggie Williams impacting the net loss of the Jaguars' future of compensatory picks.
Sure. I would you sign him?
No. I mean, and for those that don't know, it was the after midnight, Thursday night, Friday morning, when free agency started, Reggie Williams was arrested for DUI and possession of marijuana. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that throws up a big sign that says buyer beware in free agency. I mean, he just crippled his chances in free agency of landing a fair market deal.
Yeah, but it's more than that. See, the drug program is very secretive. The only thing, it's completely secretive. The only thing a team can ask the league to which they can get an answer is, will his next positive test cause him to be suspended? You see?
And it sounds like that answer could be yes.
Well, but even if it isn't, see, then you get into the nebulousness. You don't know
because
where he stands. I mean, why would you sign a guy if you don't know where he is?
Well, Reggie was arrested for possession here, right?
Yeah, but I think he got that expunged.
But it's there.
Yeah, I mean, clearly he has a history.
So, and so obviously there's going to be teams that are very leery of wanting to acquire the services of Reggie Williams.
Going into free agency, the Jaguars felt very strongly that Khalif Barnes would sign, which he has.
He did sign.
Yes, okay. With the Raiders. Gerald Sensabaugh would sign, even though he has that most recent thing in Kingsport, Tennessee.
Which is not the first incident in Kingsport, Tennessee.
But it's minor, and he'll get signed by somebody. They believe Mike Peterson will get signed. Sign and stick now. He got a stick.
Mm-hmm.
These three guys will sign and stick, and they believe that Reggie Williams would sign and stick, which would give them four that sign a couple guys. That would give them a net loss of two, and that would probably translate into a couple compensatory picks next year. Well, you know, now Reggie Williams probably I'm just guessing that it's going to be very tough for him to sign with somebody.
Absolutely.
It's at least in doubt, so you're down to maybe three and a net gain of one if you sign a couple guys. So,
which you sign Sean Considine.
Right now you're at one. If you stay at one, you'll probably end up with a net of minus two. But if you sign another guy, you might end up with a net of only minus one or maybe minus none.
Oof. Which I mean, you know, compensatory picks, I mean, they're not the save-all, but they don't hurt.
Oh, no, they don't hurt because they give you
your chances.
Listen, I gave you the names of some compensatory picks. Tom Brady, Hines Ward, Mike Vrabel. Tony Pashos was a compensatory pick by the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens got him as an extra pick in a later round. I think it was round five. And he ends up signing a big-dollar contract with the Jaguars in free agency. A lot of compensatory picks are used to trade up. You know, you take, well, you can't, no, I'm sorry. You can't use your compensatory pick. It has to be your own pick you use. But you use your own pick to trade up because you know you've got a compensatory in the same round. So if you got your own pick and a compensatory pick in round five, you can trade your own pick to move up with the idea that you haven't lost a pick in the fifth round because you still have your compensatory.
Well, not a whole lot has happened with the Jaguars in free agency. Obviously,
and a lot won't.
Yeah, we just kind of expected that.
Right.
Paul Spicer was expected to be released on Friday. Did that happen?
Yes,
it happened.
Where were you?
I'm just making conversation.
You were hunting, weren't you?
No, I wasn't. I was
you were
here.
Fishing, weren't
no,
you?
No, I was here. I was here.
Yep.
So Paul Spicer released. Fred Taylor signs with the New England Patriots.
Yes. Fred was here today, by the way.
And for what kind of a deal?
$2.5 million a year.
What's your view of that?
The view is that he took a pay cut, you know, but he never had an offer from the Jaguars. You see what I mean? He didn't take a pay cut because he didn't have a salary. He was released. He was on the books to make $6 million this year. But when they cut him, it's like, well, I want it. $1 million from my house. But if nobody buys it for $1 million, they buy it for $500,000, then your house wasn't worth $1 million.
So $2.5 million, would you like to have seen him back for that number?
Yeah, but he wasn't offered a chance to come back for $2.5 million. That's what people forget. It's not like...
Should he have been?
This team is moving on, Jeff.
Okay.
They're in rebuilding.
I'm just asking you the question because I think it's a real question that people want to know.
You know what I hate to say? But I'm going to say it anyhow because, hey, we owe people the truth. And the truth is, Fred wants a ring. You're not likely to get that ring here.
Gotcha. Well, Maurice Drew, I guess, over the last week or so, has been on a couple national radio programs saying that he wants to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to get paid a lot of money. Has anything happened with that? We had talked about it last week saying, what's the rush?
There is no rush, and I'll tell you why. Maurice Jones, because of the landscape, because the CBA is being vacated, Maurice Jones-Drew, if he doesn't get a new contract, will be a restricted free agent after next season, and he'll be a restricted free agent the season after that again. I mean, he has the Maurice's only leverage in this situation is that he is a very good football player. That's his first leverage. And his second leverage is the Jaguars like him very much. Do they have to do something? Heck no. Mo is in a really tough spot here. I don't think he should flex his muscles too much. I don't think he should create enmity. I don't think he should cause any kind of tension at all because he's not in the position to do it.
Has he created tension?
No,
this week?
No, but you're talking about him going public with some, you know, rather edgy statements. And I've heard this. I don't think that's going to benefit him. What's benefiting him is that he is a very, very good player that this team wants to make the face of the franchise.
I got you. All right, well, we'll come back with more on the other side after this break right here on Jaguars This Week.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Welcome back. Second half hour now of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Live from WOKV Jaguars Central, Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato. Of course, we invite you to join us at 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. And
I may have spoken prematurely.
On Khalif Barnes?
Yeah, he may not. It appears he has not signed yet with Oakland.
But it's expected that he is going to.
Yeah, well, but he hasn't done it yet, so.
Right. The Raiders are holding a press conference right now, but they're talking about Marquise Cooper, pardon me. Who was one of the two NFL players who was lost in the boat swamping over in the bay. 355-NFL-1. Let's grab some phone calls here, and we've got Randy on the south side. Randy, welcome to the show.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I guess I don't read enough of Vic's emails to realize I was disappointed to hear that the Jaguar organization didn't even offer Fred anything. I figured it was Fred's agent that probably got greedy or something.
No.
But not to offer one of our premier players for years anything is kind of disturbing. And I've convinced everybody in my section to renew their tickets for this year, and we just renewed our tickets, too. I just was very surprised that the Jaguar organization didn't even try to keep him here.
But you understand that they were making a football decision, that they had decided.
I know we're business, but the way we treated Mark Brunell I thought was pretty bad, and here we're doing it to somebody else.
Well, what did they do wrong with Mark Brunell?
Well, the way they kind of just dismissed him. You know, and he was gone. I've been a season ticket holder since day one.
Well, let me say this, Randy, and that you know,
I know the Jaguars is a business, but and it's entertainment for us season ticket holders who go from 12-4 1 year to 4-12 the next year.
Well, with a lot of players, it's never easy. I mean, it never will be easy. And I will say this: the way that they handled the Fred Taylor situation. Now, I'm going to say that my position is if you could have gotten him for cheap, then you should have brought him back. That's just my opinion. But I will say that the way they handled it, you know, going down to see Fred at his house, I thought was first class.
Absolutely.
All the way. And
absolutely,
you could not have done that in a better fashion.
Jeff, if the Jaguars had offered Fred $2.5 million a year, which is what I think he has ended up signing to play for in New England, he would have been highly insulted, and it would have been a PR disaster. You're much better off to give someone their freedom than to insult, you know, and taint the reputation or the relationship of that you have with one of your heritage players. Everything, all of the years, all of Fred's years with the Jaguars end happily. He leaves here with his freedom and with a wonderful 11-year career behind him, and at no time was he insulted, at no time was he tainted.
You know how they could have done it better, though? They could have brought him back up on the plane and let him meet with the local media and explain, because all we've heard is secondhand accounts of how that meeting went and what he said. We've read a couple of text message things that were running the newspaper. No one's really heard from Fred. You know, Fred could have stemmed the tide of this a little bit by coming back and saying, hey, I understand it's a business.
Yeah, but Brian, you've got to move on.
No, I mean, understand that. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have let him go. I'm saying they could have let the fans hear from him, and they haven't.
Hey, listen, the two best running backs I've ever covered, Franco Harris and Fred Taylor, were each cut by their teams. And let me tell you, Franco Harris had a much greater heritage with the Steelers.
Four Super Bowls, yeah.
The Immaculate Reception, it all started with him. And he was cut in the summer of the year that he was going to become the all-time leading rusher in National Football League history. It's the way it is. This is not, you know, this isn't a high school graduation and everybody signs their yearbook.
Agreed. All I'm saying is if they wanted to do it better, bringing him back up and letting people hear from him and see that he's not sitting somewhere crying about being cut probably would have been
I like the way it was done, and I like the way Fred handled it too. I just see a lot of manly behavior on both parts. By the way, Fred was back here today, and
there's no animosity in him.
He finally signed that picture that, you know, I've been telling Fred, sign this picture, you know, and he'd give me the smile because he knew I was saying, you're out of here.
Right.
And he finally signed it, and I love the guy. I love the guy, and I think he loves Jacksonville and loves the Jaguars, and I just don't know how it can get any better than that.
Yeah. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Mike is on the south side. Hello, Mike.
Good evening, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I noticed on Jaguars.com that we re-signed James Wyche, the guy we picked a couple years ago. I just want to know if you guys could just talk about him a little bit. Is he a guy that's like a jar-on-the-shelf type guy? I mean, can he develop into someone that can get in the rotation and be an effective player? And I'll take your comments off the air. I really appreciate it.
Well, that was the talk last camp, but it ended up the way that it did the first camp,
Jeffers,
which is injured reserve, so I wouldn't put too much stock into it.
I wish I could sit here and say that I'm excited about James Weiss's future, but I can't. I thought that last year that he made great strides, and when you watch James and his individual drills, he's extremely impressive at times. But for you know, well, some players when they do the individual period, they look great, and then all of a sudden when you put them to where they have to you know compute everything that goes on in a football game, things just don't happen like they do within an individual period, and that's what I see with James White. So no, I'm not excited about him. I like the fact that he works very hard. He comes to play every day. He does have individual talent. There's no questioning that. But for some reason, it just doesn't transfer on to the field on game day. Now, all of a sudden, well, all of a sudden you hit a point and all of a sudden it's happening for him? Maybe.
Has he been on the field on game day?
No.
No.
He's never played a game?
No. He was a practice squatter, and the last 2 years he's been on the injured reserve list.
He's being given an opportunity to compete for a roster spot in training camp, and that's the Jaguars' expectation of him, that he will come in and compete, and if he competes, then he will make for a better training camp.
You know, I like the fact that they've got him back just because he does work, and he does work very hard. But somehow or another, the switch has to come on game day and on the field when games are being played because it hasn't yet for James.
And keep in mind, they bring him back the week after they let Paul Spicer go.
Doesn't cost you anything either.
Right.
You know, it's not like you had to give this guy any guaranteed money. They probably didn't give him any.
Looking for depth. Not a starter.
355. Let's not break the pom-poms out, in other words.
Right.
You know.
355 NFL 1. Let's take a break. We'll come back with one more segment of Jaguars This Week here on a Wednesday evening on WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
About 11 minutes left in the show. You can join us, 355-NFL-1. This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Only on News Talk Radio WOKV, and you can depend on that every Wednesday night. Getting closer to the draft. Let's spend a couple minutes on it.
Yeah.
First round starting to take shape?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are guys starting to fit within two or three spots of where they belong? Or are we still a couple of weeks from
now? No, we're not there yet. Taking shape, no, it's not taking that kind of shape.
All right, well, then let's give it a little shape. Where do the two quarterbacks fit based on their work to this point?
Stafford looks like a top five, and Sanchez looks like somewhere between 5 and 10.
Okay, so that benefits the Jaguars, whether they want a quarterback or whether they went out of the top 10.
Yeah, if Sanchez is on the available when the Jaguars pick, they may pick him. I really do believe they like him too, and I really do believe that they will pick the highest-rated guy on their board.
I saw USC some. I don't know how much you saw of them last year, Logs, but some. I saw the Rose Bowl. That's what I liked. Did you see the Rose Bowl game?
Oh, yeah. He just dominated.
Yeah, and that's a Big Ten team. That's
those receivers were not that open.
Yeah.
They were not running wide open. He fit the ball into some very tight windows, and he did it against Ohio State, too.
Right.
He's a tremendous player, but you know, I think the one thing that a lot of people will look at with Sanchez when they come down to their final evaluation is, will they say, was he surrounded by greatness?
It sure was.
Because, I mean, there's no team in college football that has as much talent as USC, bottom line.
And now, the greatness on offense wasn't as great as the greatness on defense.
No, but I mean still. When you compare the level of players that they have on their offense mm-hmm. and compare it to the level of players of their opponent's defenders, it's a big gap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that'll be an interesting conversation, you know, with Sanchez. And I mean, right now, like you said, they got him right around where the Jaguars are going to pick. So what will happen?
The thing that's starting to become clear is that the tackles, the top tackles in the draft, aren't presenting themselves where the Jaguars are at number 8. Monroe will be gone. Michael O'Hur is a wonderful story, but you know, man,
too much of a risk.
That's really...
How about Andre Smith? You know, he's fallen a little bit. They expect him to be
top
three.
You see, there's a major character issue there.
Will that take him off of their board?
Not off the board, but I think it's going to drop him out of contention for the number 8 spot. And the other guy, Jason Smith from Baylor, is a 2-point stance guy. I don't think he fits for them there. Whereas Andre Smith, before the Saturday disappearance, Oh, he fit right there. He was their guy. So then you turn to Ray Malaluga. Malaluga. And a wonderful player.
Yeah.
But, you know, his deceased father was a short, very heavy man. And Ray Malaluga's really battled weight. You know, are you going to pick a guy who's going to blow up to 300 pounds?
Maybe. I saw him at the Senior Bowl, and he looked in phenomenal shape. Of course, it's the Senior Bowl. He's coming right out of the season,
right,
and he's in shape. You don't know.
He was a little chubby at the combine, and then he pulled up with a hamstring and in his run and didn't work out, you know, well. And
he was dominant at the Senior Bowl, though.
It's the bottom of the first round that looks so good with the Matthews and the Cushings and the LeSean McCoys and Donald Browns.
Could one of those other two linebackers from USC climb as high as the top 10?
No, it doesn't appear. But they're down there at the bottom of the first round with some other really good-looking guys. The wide receiver from Penn State who shot up the board with his sub 4 340. Help me out. Deion Butler. I had a great run and a great combine, and he came on real strong late in the season, especially in the Rose Bowl. Looked like he was taking over the number one receiver position from Derek Williams. He might surge into the bottom of the first round. That's sub 4.3 speed.
Yeah.
And then you look at, let's see, who else? Alex Mack, the center from Cal, would be a good player for this team. But those guys are all at the bottom of the round. That's where the value is, the bottom of the first round, and I know the Jaguars would love to get there.
How many other teams, though, would love to get there?
Everybody.
Obviously, Belichick.
Everybody.
Right.
Did you hear that story?
No. What's the story?
Apparently, allegedly Belichick was offered the 15th pick of the draft by Denver for Matt Castle. Now, why Denver? Apparently, they've soured on Jay Cutler.
Cutler reportedly has been complaining since his quarterback's coach went to USC in the offseason.
Okay. Belichick said, no, we don't want the 15th pick of the draft. We want the 34th pick of the draft from Kansas City, who traded for Castle, gave the Patriots the 34th pick. Did they get another fifth?
Nope.
Just the 34th pick. Now, of course, Scott Pioli is the new guy there, so there could be a little bit of, brotherhood, shall we say.
Sure, he helped him out, though. Look at the money that he took off of his cap.
But Belichick explained. He said they have four picks in the first two rounds, and he didn't want to strap his owner with another second-round pick, especially a high second-round pick, because Belichick said that the difference in talent from the high part of the first round to the low part of the first round isn't as great as the savings from the high part of the first round to the bottom of the first round. In other words,
money's better spent in the bottom of the
first round. I can get better value late in the first round. Now, there have been other drafts where that's occurred. I can remember lots of drafts where they say this is a good year not to have a
you
high
could
pick.
You could make a case that is true every year. You really could.
Probably could.
You really could.
But this year, it seems especially true this year because Marino and Wells, for instance, didn't run well. And Donald Brown, the running back from UConn, did run well. And there's Sean Green, and there's LeSean McCoy. There's a bevy of running backs at the bottom of the first round, the top of the second round, who appear to have more speed than Wells and Marino.
355 NFL 1. I'm just looking at a couple of the other names here near the top. And there are some defensive tackles, defensive linemen, I should say, if you count the defensive end from Texas. Are they top 10 material? Or
Brian Arakpo is a 10 to 15 guy. Tyler Jackson, the defensive, is it Tyler Jackson?
Tyson Jackson,
the defensive end from LSU, appears to be a 20 to 25 guy.
What about the kid from BC?
BJ Raji looks like a 10 to 15 guy, but now I'm reading stuff about character concerns.
And Everett Brown from Florida State.
He's a top half of the draft, top half of the first round guy, clearly. But, you know, then you talk about Cameron Wimberly.
FSU,
the Browns' first-round pick. He's been a total bust. You know, Florida State has had a penchant for turning out Renard Wilson-type players.
I was thinking of his name the other day, and I couldn't even recall it. the 96 draft. He was a second round pick.
And also Jamal Reynolds. Jamal Reynolds.
Cameron Wimberly.
Renard Wilson. They've had a bunch of these guys.
The guy that I've heard is really climbing.
Alonzo Jackson. Here's another one. Total bust.
The defensive tackle from Mississippi. Jerry.
Yes. Jaguars like him.
Big guy.
They like him a lot at the lower half of the first round.
Which is kind
of
weird.
There's a guy, if the Jaguars could trade out of the 8-hole and move down in the bottom of the first round, your light would shine right on him.
I would think that most teams would like to trade down to accumulate the extra picks, but I have a feeling that that board, you know, the value board where you have numbers assigned to every pick, is not going to be in its traditional form this year.
What do you mean?
Well, you know how they would say, okay, the first pick of the draft is worth 500 points.
Oh, that? Okay, I see what
you're talking about, the numeric
table. The value chart, right.
Yeah, the value chart. Mm-hmm. I would have to think that most teams would not be willing to follow that rule.
Let me tell you about the numeric table.
This year.
Let me tell you what happened to the numeric table. The Baltimore Ravens shot a big hole in it last year. The numeric table is bye-bye. It's Gonski. That Derek Harvey trade ruined the numeric table forever, or for a while.
Or rewrote it completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Jaguars
should have been rewritten.
Numerically were big winners in that deal, and the Ravens get the quarterback of their long-term future.
And how do you see it being rewritten? Less value on the top?
They got too much
less
value
disparity.
At the top.
Okay.
They got the numbers are way too big at the top.
Jeff's right on.
I mean, I've said that for years.
Yep.
To me, that if you can get what the value chart used to say, if you were trading down, by all means, take it.
Seems to me like just a little bit of logic could have changed that chart.
I don't know who came up with it. Was it Jimmy Johnson?
It was Jimmy Johnson, yeah. Of course, he had all the picks.
I mean, if you're trading down and that works for you, take it.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
Well, that'll do it for our show this evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're back here every Wednesday night live inside WOKV Jaguars Central. As we get closer, obviously, we will focus more intently on the Jaguars and where they're headed in the draft. So don't forget, every Wednesday night, 6:06, right here on these fine airwaves across News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Good night.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, brought to you by North Florida's labor unions, such as the Association of Firefighters in Duval, Nassau, Clay, and St. John's Counties, and Community First Credit Union, the home of First Down Touchdown for teachers. Jaguars This Week is a presentation of the WOKV Jacksonville Jaguars Radio Network.